It is wonderful to be with everyone. I know that only some are here on Zoom, but we've got many more who are on the live stream, which is about to start on the live stream, and then also on the recording side. And this is a really wonderful occasion. You know, on the one hand, we know the world is burning. The world is burning. There's a war. There's hate. We have our hostages. On the other hand, we know there are so many acts of kindness, so much beauty in the world right now. And as the Rambam famously says, the world is, it's like a scale. It's each act we do, tilts that scale towards the redemption of the world or the destruction of the world. And that's what we're here to do. We're here to tilt the scale together. We're here to say in the face of darkness, in the face of evil, we will not give up. We will continue to share Torah. We will continue to add light into the world. We'll continue to build community and be proud as Am Yisrael. And we're here with my great, great teachers, Rav Yitz and Blue Greenberg in Yerushalayim. What a wonderful opportunity to learn from them and to celebrate three extraordinary young women in Paris, in Yerushalayim, in Barcelona, who are just doing incredible things in the world. And at a dark time like this, the most important thing we could do is lift each other up. Lift each other up and continue to add light into the world. And so that's what we're here to do. And we're here to do that in the great memory of the wonderful J.J. Greenberg, of blessed memory, who I was never fortunate to have met, or at least I don't know that I did, but you never know. But I've learned so much about over the years and of his Menschlichkeit, which matches everything of their family. And what he stood for in the world and what he would stand for today, and want to know that we are continuing to build the Jewish community, and not just build it, but building it on the deepest values that we cherish the most, in terms of inclusivity, in terms of justice, in terms of the midot, the character traits that we cherish. So friends, our plan today is our dear friends, Rav Yitz and Mrs. Blue Greenberg, are going to talk a little bit about their son, JJ, to the extent they want, of blessed memory. And they're going to share a little bit about the three Torat Chaim Award recipients in Yerushalayim and in Barcelona and in Paris. And then we're going to have the chance to hear some Pesach Torah from Rav Yitz to get us more deeply, you know, in the groove of liberation at this moment, because it's such a complicated time as we're thinking about national survival. On so many fronts, on the social media war, in the actual war, you know, in the progressive war, in so many different ways, and to think about how we can continue to defend ourselves and continue to be on the front lines, advocating for our most cherished values. So with that, I'm going to take a pause and I'm going to hand it over to our dear teachers in Yerushalayim. We're so grateful that they're here today. I'm so grateful that we continue to raise up JJ's memory as we celebrate great leaders in the field. So Rav Yitz and Mrs. Blue, we're going to pass it over to you. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Yitz is going to start, and I'm going to fix the lighting. But the lighting is not good here.
So would you want to have the, we'll give the awards first and then talk about Pesach?
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's terrific. Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. Thank you so much.
That's what we wanted. So,
how's that? Is that better?
It looks great over there. It looks great.
Okay. Good. I'll be right.
We're going first, Blue.
Well, yes, I'm going to go get my pieces.
Okay. So I will say one sentence at least about Pesach before I get into the details of the award, but we'll come back to the, of course, to the Passover theme, the Pesach theme. But I actually spoke with the Orthodox Tzedek Fellows a couple of months ago, and the first thing I said to them is the first thing I want to say to you also. According to Ben Azai in the Talmud, the fundamental principle, the great principle that guides everything in the Torah, all our commitments, all our practices, well, our vision is the principle that every human being is created in the image of God. What that means, that as the Talmud understands it, What that means is that every human being is given by God, or if you will, is born with the intrinsic dignities that are not dependent on society, not dependent on their bank account, not dependent on their official demographic or social, not skin color and not religion. It all comes down to the belief that they are all in the image of God, which the Talmud explains implies three fundamental dignities that every human being should be treated in spirit. One is infinite value. Every life.
I'm trying to get you into focus here.
Every life. Every life has unlimited value. In fact, every life is worth more than any amount of money that you could imagine. To save a life, there's no limit to the amount of money one should spend. But I'm not just speaking about emergencies. How about the very concept that there should be enough money, that no one should be deprived of medical insurance because they couldn't afford it, that no one should be deprived of food because they couldn't afford it. That is the first fundamental principle of the tradition. Now, the honest answer is that right now, the world is not in any position to spend infinite amount of money on each individual, although in principle, Judaism says it should. And that is what Tikkun Olam is about. It's about increasing the wealth in the world and the willingness to spend that wealth for human life and human dignity. The second intrinsic dignity is equality. There is no preferred image of God. God is neither white nor black. God is every skin color. Every human being is in God's image. God is not Jewish or non-Jewish or Christian or Buddhist or Muslim, because all human beings are equal before God, and there's no preferred standing because they all have that dignity of equality. And of course, again, the question is, how do you practice that? And that means equality before the law. It means equality economically. It means equality politically, that I have freedom and the right to vote and the right to change governments and so on. The third dignity that every human being is born with is uniqueness. No one person is duplicatable. Each person is only one of a kind, and that ever will be one of a kind. And that means they're irreplaceable. These are the dignities that are born into a person by birth. And these are the dignities that should be practiced in society. And that's, of course, the great challenge and the great difficulty, because you have everything from dictatorship and oppression, discrimination, all forms of sexism or antagonism to foreigners, xenophobia. I mean, there are 100 variations, but it boils down to the same thing, a world in which we see lots of equality and rejection of people for being different. Well, the Torah's answer to that, or the Jewish answer to that, is we have to repair the world, we have to correct it. Those are all realities. And in fact, we may not be able to correct it in one step, but step by step, we're committed to make that change. And the same holds true with uniqueness. So I start with those three dignities, but that is something that applies to the whole world, not just the Jewish people. Adam, Eve, the original images of God are human. They're not particularly Jewish or any religion or any color or any. Given that truth, that is the vision for the whole world. And Jewish messianism, the teaching of the Torah and of the prophets, that someday the world will be made whole and perfect, it means we'll overcome all these enemies of life, of dignity, of value, of equality, of uniqueness. So we'll have to overcome poverty. We'll have to overcome hunger. We'll have to overcome war, which degrades and kills images of God. We'll have to overcome oppression, all forms of inequality, discrimination, and where dictatorship or other forms of authoritarian rule. That's the promise, but that's to everybody. What Passover represents, what the Jewish tradition teaches about Passover, is that it starts with the Jewish people. It might say, and Passover, when the Jews were taken from slavery into freedom, it's a kind of a down payment. It's a living example and promise that the universal redemption, the universal exodus, will take place. So it starts with the Jews, but it doesn't stop with the Jews. This is be understood as the Jewish ability to directly live through this experience. So we can say in justice to the whole world, we believe not just out of faith, but out of experience, out of history, that this is going to happen to everybody will be taken from homelessness or from alien status or from asylum seeking into a world in which they are citizens, fully equal, fully participating. So I start with that. And I'll come back to that because I want to speak in particular about Passover, the experience, not just the memory, but the experience of redemption and how we live it in our time. But I start with that in, because I want to say a word about JJ and about the award winners, and Blue will say more. What I want to say is that that was one of his most endearing qualities. He very much felt that the Jewish people and the Jewish experience, including freedom, or his experience of the birth of Israel and Zionism, to him, this was a kind of a down payment. This was a living example to the world that it can be done, because people say it can't be done. And he also felt very strongly that the Jewish experience speaks for itself. He did not approach outreach because we're in danger, because we're going to assimilate, we're afraid we're going to lose the Jews. His attitude was just the opposite. Here we have this extraordinary, rich, personally meaningful, very exciting, living way of life. It includes justice. It includes dignity of all. But that's part of its pleasure. That's part of feeling at home and feeling fulfilled in it. And so his approach was just share it. You don't have to threaten people that if they don't take this, they're going to be punished by God, or if they don't take this, they're going to become assimilated. He said, just share it, the fact that people will welcome this kind of living experience and find it so meaningful that it's like contagious. And so he felt, again, you don't have to choose between being a good Jew and caring and looking out for the non-Jews or for the rest of the world. The answer is just the opposite. Take your good experience, your riches, your values, your history as a Jew, and just share it, first with fellow Jews, so they will want to share it, and then share it with the rest of the world, so they will have a living model of where they're going and how they can go. And of course, you help them. And that's part of our love for Uri Letzedek, because we feel like it's committed to help and to share, not just the Jewish people and its sense of justice, but to bring it to every other people in danger, people in threat. I'll come back to that. So I want to just say that we are personally deeply to this day, deeply grieve the loss of JJ, but one of the most consoling and meaningful comfort in this terrible loss experience is the realization that you have brought to us in the Young Leadership Award of Uri Letzedek, that there are people out there who have these same wonderful values, love of human beings, pride as a Jew, willingness to share the pleasure and the fulfillment that they feel in this religion with others and bring it to others who are deprived. And for that matter, to bring its qualities of commitment to peace and to human dignity and share them and give them and fight for them for every other people who needs it in some way. So it's a privilege to us, and it's a comfort and a sense. It gives us a hope for the future that people of this quality in the next generation are living these values, practicing them. Blue, you wanted to share some of your thoughts and
yes, I'll come reactions. I'll bring my chair over there. Sorry. Wait, I'm coming. Good. You see. Good. Okay, so firstly, mazal tov to the award winners and to all of you involved in the program. It's a beautiful program and very, very heartwarming. Very heartwarming to read the bios and to just imagine what all of you are doing, so many different facets of building for the future. And building for the future, even as we fill in the gaps that exist in our communities today. It makes me realize how much there is to do to keep Judaism vital for the next generation. And also makes me feel very proud, all of us feel very proud, that three young women have taken the initiative to work in community organizations, to create programs, to build organizations and institutions that address the problems that move the needle, that will revitalize our whole community and our faith. And this was very much in JJ's spirit, his image, excuse me, his work, as he has said, of outreach to make Judaism available to everyone. He had a very big embrace, and it wasn't just superficial. It was very deep. Three examples of the work that he did. One was Gypsy, the Jewish public school youth, which he helped build.
That was his first job.
That's right. And it was
first
first professional unpaid job.
Started unpaid.
What he did was he wanted to make Judaism available to Jewish kids, who high school students, who really had no other connection, who had no affiliation, no connection, and no access, really. And so he went in, this program went into the high schools, and I'll tell you what JJ's great secret was. He made pizza parties, and that brought a lot of kids to the organization, to the program. And his second big project was Makor, and again, to bring young adults who were not affiliated, and he did that through music. This is what, that was Makor specialized in, bringing people who would otherwise be meeting at bars and other non-Jewish activities.
Makor, of course, set in a much later professional state. Where he could raise millions to create it. But Makor was presented like a kind of a nightclub. It was a home in which you could come for drama programs, for classes, for Jewish holiday experiences, and for most of all, for a dinner and a meal, and actually dinner and lunch, and music. And so the attraction was to Jews who wouldn't go to a community center or even to a synagogue, but who were very drawn to the music and to the new faces and new musicians. So that became the channel in which they connected to the Jewish people again and to their experiences as Jews.
And his third major project, there were probably several others in between, but there was Birthright Israel, when he explored, how to connect Jews, young Jews, to Israel. And again, I think that one of the requirements was that they had no previous connection to Israel. So these were people who, again, would not have, built a lifelong love of Israel through what was a beautiful 10-day or 2-week program. And it was planned in a way that other trips were not, and he let them see the total Israel experience, and not just the Kotel, but also the nightclubs in Tel Aviv and the games on the beach and so forth. So now I want to say that what I said before, that about reading the bios, excuse me, of the winners, why this was so inspiring, because the three of you, I was wondering, Julie, is this the first time that three women have received the awards? I think in previous years, it's probably unique that this is particularly celebrating three women, and Ariella Wilhelm, who's has a very busy calendar and full of activities, primarily among them Kehillat Ayeka, which is where are you? It's taken from the biblical, you know, are you counted? Where are you? And after my own heart, where it's a merging of feminist and traditional values. And also I'd be fascinated to hear what the radio show is, Nashim, that celebrates Jewish women in history. We could use a translation of that in English and in Hebrew around the world. The idea of merging feminist and traditional values, and not only doing that for others, but immersing herself in text to deepen her own knowledge and to share it. And then her third major interest, as I read from the bios, is the Shoah Memorial. And this is it was an important part of JJ's consciousness, Jewish consciousness. And it's, I say, the Shoah is part of our genetic makeup. And I think recognizing that and it deepens one's Jewishness. Ethel Malka, who lives in Jerusalem, born in France, but made Aliyah at the age of three. Her own journey is a fascinating one. And it could be a model for every woman and every man. She created and works for Roots at a time when a lot of people are giving up, and she is very strongly involved in and in pursuing this idea that building programs that enable people to work together and live in peace together. And excuse me, this is perhaps more vital now than ever before. She gives credit to her family for teaching her to love others. And that was such a beautiful part of her acknowledgement that, you know, you have to, it's important for every parent and every person to realize that these values of loving others have to be instilled at an early age. And she sees how Judaism is and can be a source of harmony. And it's not just a cliche to love others, but really to coordinate work groups and activities where people actually come to engage each other, if not to love each other immediately, to learn to live each other and respect each other. One example of the groups that she brings together, or she's brought together, are yeshiva students and Palestinians of the same age. And that should be, you know, I hope there are recordings and so that we can learn lessons of peace from those, the harmony and the interaction of those groups.
So I'm going to break in again for a moment just to say about, I was just struck about it, and we were talking about it, Blue and I, before. This is a moment where almost the whole world is ready to give up, and as everybody's convinced, you know, the hatred, Hamas's attack was full of hatred and cruelty, and the civilian casualties and the threat of famine in Palestine. So everybody sort of feels this is a moment when, like, there's no hope, almost no hope for peace or for a future where both peoples live in peace and in dignity side by side and things like that. So it makes Roots even more important. And it makes that whole vision of bringing Palestinians and Israelis together. And to do it at a time when everybody else, or so many people, have given up, makes the work 10 times more valuable than before. I was saying this in part also because Rav Hanan Schlesinger was one of the two co-founders, is on this program too. And it's something that really should give all of us hope. That is to say, you don't give in. Someone once said, reality is not a fact, it's a challenge. And you don't give in, no matter how bad or how negative the present moment is, and in the country, it's a moment where you rededicate yourself to the belief that in the end we'll overcome war and that the whole world will live in peace. Obviously, they're tremendously difficult, but it's our all power to and all praise to those who don't give up, but roll up their sleeves and work harder.
Yes, and I just want to reiterate that this is more urgent than ever, probably than any other time in our modern, you know, Israeli history. So it takes a very strong action, proaction, and kol hakavod to you. Our third winner is Susanna Akrich, who's from Barcelona, born and raised in Barcelona. And her work is focused on the next generation. She is the Rosh Chinuch, which is the chief of educational content for Yachad Barcelona, which is a kvutza for non-formal, for informal or non-formal Jewish education. And I think that as especially communities in the diaspora that are not, you know, that sometimes struggle against the majority culture, it's so important to focus on the transmission of Jewish values and Jewish knowledge to the next generation. She has created so many dynamic, creative programs, games, synagogue activities, and bringing families to the shul. And it's just a vital model for all diaspora communities. So I want to say yashar koach to the three extraordinary winners. We know we'll see great things from each of them and wonderful outcomes in their communities and in the broader Jewish community. Mazal tov. And hello to Judy Kaftwell, my neighbor. You see Judy.
Yeah. Shmuley, I'm not sure what goes next. I think you go next, but.
Rabbi Yitz, feel free to start your class. Rabbi Shmuley is experiencing a little bit of tech difficulties right now.
Okay, sorry. It's okay. I'll just say that something I learned from Rabbi Soloveitchik, which I think particularly strengthens the point about Passover. He said Passover, people speak of, and even in the Kiddush and even in the prayers, it says Zecher, the memory of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Passover celebrates the memory of the Exodus. But Soloveitchik points out that if you look at the Seder program itself, which is the main reenactment, the main celebration of Passover, the Seder itself, it's more than just memory. It's more than just memory. It's literally an attempt to experience or reenact the Exodus. The obvious example of experiencing it is matzah, where you eat the bread of affliction. So it's not, you just don't talk about the fact that we were given hard crust of bread and that was all you had. You literally eat it and taste it again. Or maror, you don't just simply talk about the bitterness and the cruelty and the suffering of slavery. You literally choke it, you swallow it and you choke on it and you feel a kind of a burning sensation of what it meant to be a slave. It's not just a nice image. It's meant to be something that hits you so deeply in your kishkes, that in your stomach, in your emotion, in your heart, that you will be driven to act on it. So it's not just memory. It's memory and experience, which together drive you. When you've had that taste, as the Torah itself says, you remember what it felt like to be an outsider, to be a stranger in the land of Egypt. So then you, and I'm speaking now in 2024, not just the Jews of the Exodus and of the desert, in 2024, you will taste again the cruelty, the suffering, the feeling of being rejected, of being an asylum seeker, or being someone who has no citizenship and no right to be here, who feels or who is treated by the authorities even as inferior and as somebody who can be ordered or enslaved. And of course, again, Orula Tzedek has pointed out repeatedly, we have contemporary slavery. It's not just a memory of the past. So the point is, you should not just remember, you should feel it so hard, so painfully, so directly, that it will drive you to act and act in a serious way. I think, again, for Jews to feel the pain and the statelessness, we didn't have a state of Israel, how we suffered, is a very powerful incentive, as Roots tries to say, for Jews then to feel like, how do Palestinians feel without having a state? And is there some way we can share that experience and win their trust and their confidence, and they can win our trust, that they can reject and disown leadership like Hamas, which is committed to death and hatred and destruction, and establish their own leadership, democratic leadership, that really is committed to live in justice and in peace side by side. And I believe if we can do that, that would be a major step toward getting acceptance of the two-state solution, not just in the world and among Palestinians, but among Israelis, who after all, and historically did that. 20 years ago, in 13, 14 years ago in 2009, the government of Israel offered a Palestinian state. And it's because there were enough majority that would trust that they would live in peace. If there's a problem now, it's because the majority of Israelis have lost their confidence that they can live in peace. And that's why, again, work like Roots is so important. When people meet each other, they realize the humanity and the goodness and the decency of the other, and it begins to recreate the trust that we can trust that we work and live together. So I come back to Passover. It's meant to be not an exclusive or internal Jewish experience alone. It is meant to drive home as powerfully as possible to every Jew that you have not just a memory of suffering, but the feeling of suffering, which makes you determined not to let this go on and not to let this happen to other people. It's not just the memory of being redeemed, but it's the delirious pleasure of going from hard bread and bitter herbs to a festive meal with family and friends. So suddenly you feel the taste of freedom, of choice, of dignity, of being there by right. You know, in ancient times, in medieval times, there was this custom that the Torah refers to. When they ate the Seder meal, they would put on their travel clothes, they'd put some of their possessions in a kind of a knapsack, and they would walk around the table, walk around the room, to reenact or pre-enact, it was originally, the Exodus from Egypt. So here again, we're not just talking about nice memories, we're living it so strongly that we get through and say, well, this can't stop with me. It has to be shared and passed on to others. So the whole Passover experience is meant, on the one hand, to confirm the most particular memories of Jews and of the Jewish people, the memory of how they took our children and slaughtered them and drowned them. And we had no power to protect them. Just as we are driven by the memory of Shoah, that millions of our people were rounded up and gassed and tortured and locked in ghettos, and we could not help them. We didn't have the power and the strength at that time. So this becomes the driving force to ensure that we'll always have a state and a power. And as I suggested, maybe it's also the motivation to see how many more we can share this opportunity and this power with, so that everybody can have that experience of being by right and by dignity in their own place, in their own country. So it starts with a very distinctive Jewish memory that makes us feel more Jewish and makes us feel more intensely the pain and the pride of having been a Jew throughout history, and that we are the successors. But it doesn't stop there. And to me, that's the point I want to drive in again and again. The Exodus is the down payment. Isaiah speaks of a future Exodus, the Messianic Exodus, in which the not only the Jews, but the whole world leaves. And he says, the Jewish Exodus from Egypt was hasty. It says, B'chipazo, they had to get out of there fast before the Egyptians changed their mind. And as we know, the Egyptians shortly changed their minds and tried to chase them and force them back into slavery. So they had to run. Isaiah predicts that there'll be a future Exodus. They won't have to run. They'll go out in dignity and in calmness because the world will have been changed fundamentally, and everybody, no one would dare to challenge the right of every people to go into Exodus. So I'll just conclude by saying that this is the challenge of being the generation, this generation of covenant. The Jewish religion and its promise of a future redeemed world is a covenant. It's a partnership between God and the Jewish people, which is a sub-partnership of the partnership between God and humanity, which starts in the Noah traditions. And then it goes on. This covenant is between not only God and humans, but between the human generations. It can't be accomplished in one generation. And so each generation must prepare its successor and convince them to take, to carry on. But each generation in its lifetime is fully responsible. So you can't say, well, we never did this before. Or you can't say, well, we in the past compromised with this evil. The answer is, yes, they did the best they could. You take on this challenge. You are the fully responsible one now. Moses lives in you. Aaron lives in you. The Joshua, the rabbis of the Talmud, they all live in you now because all their work in advancing toward a better world would disappear unless you take it up. So this generation is being tried as not many other generations. It's a very shocking and difficult period. The anti-Semitism, the anti-Israel, the hostility. It is very intimidating, the fear we have that between Hezbollah and Hamas and Iran, that Israel is existentially at risk. These are very frightening experiences. But what the Pesach teaches us is that each generation, in tasting the past, realizes it's been this bad before, not the first time, not the last time. And therefore, we should not give in to those circumstances, but renew our commitment to carry it on and to have the faith and belief that the one-time Exodus will be renewed and redone, not just for Jews, but for the whole world. And just as the Exodus of the State of Israel, in its size, in its numbers, in its achievements, is really as great and greater than the biblical experience, so we might say the world's Exodus, the coming Exodus, the one that we are working for, will be greater than that Exodus. And someday we'll have a world of universal Exodus, a world in which every people lives in its own dignity, in its own homeland, in its own by right, and everybody has the confidence and the respect of each other because these dignities have been shared with everybody. That's my Pesach pitch.
Thank you so much, Rabbi. We really appreciate you, and we appreciate all of our winners today. We want to open up the space for our winners to share a couple of words. Susanna, Ethel, or Ariel, if you would like to say something, you can go ahead and unmute yourself. Ethel, you can say something if you want as well in Hebrew.
I just want to say thank you so much for this evening. Here it's evening. It was a good in those days of uncertainty and fear. It's good to have a reminder that we have our Jewish values that guides us all the time, and they have a deep knowledge and deep chokhmah, and it's a Torah chaim. So thank you for this evening.
Thank you so much. Susana, si quieres, puedes hablar en español.
No, bueno, I can speak in English too.
Okay.
I also wanted to thank a lot for this evening. And also, it was very interesting to know other people that do things, because, bueno, here in Barcelona, there's not a lot of Jewish, well, the community is great, but it's not very, very big. So it's very beautiful to see other people that is making efforts to, like, bueno, do good things. And that's it. And thank you. And Hasako Baruch for the show.
Thank you so much. Ariel?
Sorry, yeah.
Merci en anglais. Do you hear us?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so Rabbi Miriam will translate.
I'm the official translator.
Okay.
I don't think they even see me from that perspective. Okay.
Ben, ravi aussi de cette belle après-midi et ravi de pouvoir avoir ce coup de pouce, comme je le disais tout à l'heure, de ce beau prix, et ravi d'avoir rencontré également les autres filles qui ont, j'ai l'impression, la même dynamique que moi. Donc voilà, merci pour cette belle après-midi, merci pour ces beaux mots de Torah.
I don't really know where the camera, probably over there. Ariel is delighted to have received the prize and said that she spent an amazing evening receiving your Torah, learning from Rabbi Gitz, and that it's really giving her the enthusiasm to keep doing all her projects, knowing that there are others who are doing the work at the same time in different places. And hearing quelque chose que tu voudrais que j'ajoute? No, Ariel is just very happy right now.
Yeah. Thank you, Eddie.
Thank you so much. Friends, it's been an incredible night. For those of you who it's nighttime, morning for us here in the United States. We appreciate all of you, and this is a great night to celebrate. And Blue, you were exactly correct. This is a historic time for us, as all three winners are women. That brings us such great joy to be able to celebrate women's leadership and celebrate some powerful Torah here and in the loving memory of JJ. Let's continue to inspire and live and continue to make beautiful change, uplift beautiful Torah in JJ's memory. Everybody, thank you so much for being a part of this event. Have a good day. Have a good night. Buenas noches. Laila Tov. Take care.
Bonne nuit, non? Bonne nuit. Ça va.